Welcome to Lives, a show exploring our experiences in the world and how we might live well. I'm your host, Stuart Chittenden, and my guest today is photographer and founder of Luli Creative House, Ariel Panowitz. We talk about how Panowitz has crafted her own photographic aesthetic, her inspirations, and her professional growth, including opening Luli Creative House. Panowitz also talks about the magic she creates with her clients and for the community, the joys of color, and her love of people.
You know, we live in such a beautiful, colorful world. And in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to dim the trees. I don't want to dim the sky. I want to blast the trees in the sky. I want to show people how beautiful and colorful the world is that we live in.
Ariel Panowitz has built her career on her love for uplifting others through her imagery and creative direction. Graduating from the Art Institute of Colorado with a BFA in photography, she returned to her hometown, Omaha, to contribute to the growth of the creative community. As well as her professional photography business, in 2022, Panowitz opened Luli Creative House, a community-forward creative studio and small event space where people can come together and be celebrated just as they are. Panowitz's work has been published in People magazine, Huffington Post, The New York Times, The Associated Press, the BBC, Reuters, The Today Show, and many, many more. Ariel Panowitz, welcome to Lives.
Hello, thanks for having me.
We were just chatting a little bit off air, and I sort of want to get to some of these, the origins, and thinking about photography as a subject and photography as a sort of technology. But let's start with, what is that first image you can remember where you were the subject of being photographed?
So the first thing that comes to mind is I lived in Tucson, Arizona for a few years when I was younger. And this was, I think, the first time that I really remember this being what people now would refer to as my dress-up era. And I remember just being very into jewelry and, you know, playing with my mother's makeup and dressing up. And I have this vivid memory going into my backyard with a friend of mine and posing and sort of having, you know, this first realization of striking a pose and kind of being fancy and having fun with it. And that's the first time that I really remember. And I see the photo so vivid in my mind. And yeah, it was the first moment of like, I want to dress up and have fun and have my photo taken.
I love that sensation, that feeling, that memory that you're conjuring. And obviously we will draw on that feeling as we talk about your business. But the other question then is, when you remember first holding a camera?
Let's see, the first time I remember holding a camera. My father was a photographer more as a hobby when I was younger. And so I remember playing around with older cameras. But I think as an adult, more so perhaps as a teenager, the first time that I really remember sort of owning photography as my own was actually with disposable cameras, not to age myself, but disposable cameras. I was always the gal who was taking a million photos everywhere we went. And yeah, there's something so, you know, we live in such a digital world now. And I think there's just something really amazing about being able to take photos and not know what they're going to look like until they get developed later. And yeah, so I think that's the first time that I remember really owning photography as my own and really falling in love with the craft.
What was that motivation for you to be that, as you describe yourself, that gal always with the disposable camera, capturing scenes? Yeah, what was kind of pulling you to that, especially when I look back now from an era of instant gratification to that delay when you didn't know how is this image going to turn out?
I think the reason that I originally fell in love with photography and really still is the reason, is really what still drives me today, is I love people. And typically, most of the time, I think when you start out photography, you're capturing happy moments for people. And I think I loved my friends and my family, and I found myself in these spaces where people were joyful and celebrating, and I wanted to capture that, you know, that feeling of being elated and joyful with your people. And, you know, I think a great way to sort of capture the essence of what that feels like, and being able to bottle it up, is having a photograph, a still photograph to look back on. And so I think that that's why I really started taking photos.
Were you raised in a creative household? You mentioned your father just a minute ago, and that he was, I think you described him more as an amateur photographer, but what was your household environment like?
Yes, I was raised in a very creative household. Thanks, Mom and Dad. My mother is just the epitome of a creative woman. She is a jewelry designer, and she wears many hats. Even just saying she is a, like, I'm like, no, she is many things. But we were raised in an environment where we were encouraged to be free creatively and to play around with different mediums and different things. And my parents were very good at exposing us to art and, I think, the beauty of the world. I think that's another reason I started taking photos outside of the human aspect. I just fell in love with the beauty of the world. And, you know, I think my parents really kind of opened that up. We lived in Arizona. You know, we would go hike and travel, and but also just even in our own backyard, you know, they, I think, really encouraged me to stop and look around at the flowers and at the sunset and at the mountains. And so they're a creative bunch.
As much as photography is a marvelous medium by which to capture, as you say, that and bottle that essence of joy and loving people, there are also many other creative media that could have been a pathway that you chose. So did you explore other creative avenues than photography?
Years ago, people used to ask me if I did video or if I was going to expand my business and my skill set to be able to do video. And I have never been interested in other mediums, I think, not even professionally, but, you know, I dabble and I love doing art of all kinds, but there's just something about a still photograph. I mean, it sounds cliche, but it literally is a moment frozen in time. I think what I love so much about still imagery is that the viewer sort of gets to take the story into their own hands a bit. So I like that you don't know everything that is happening in the photo. You can take bits and pieces of what you're viewing and kind of create your own narrative around what you think is happening and who this person is and what they're feeling in this moment. And there's just something really powerful about a still image. I think especially, you know, it's interesting in today's world. The world seems to be moving in a direction towards quick clips. And although I think there is a lot of beauty and power in that too, I don't know. There's just something about a still photograph that can't be compared to anything else.
It's clear in hindsight that you've developed a robust practice. But when you first began to explore photography, even perhaps deciding that that was the degree you wanted to pursue, let alone the business. Did you, or did people around you, did your parents, were they a little anxious that you weren't pursuing a mainstream career of some sort, but you were going into something that was more artistic? Was there any sort of hesitation about, you know, don't go into the arts, you'll get paid nothing and it's really tricky to do?
No, not at all. So post high school, I went to UNL. I made it about a semester down there. And then I needed to move back to Omaha because I was just unsure what I wanted to do. And I think I have a lot of thoughts about going to college when you're 18, jumping into what you think you want to do. Anyway, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I came back to Omaha. Again, was unsure of what I really wanted to do and was exploring some things. And I was taking general education courses at UNO and waiting tables. And there was a day where my dad took me to a park because that's what we would do when we would have conversations about specific things. And he just straight up told me, hey, I just want to make sure you know that you could do photography as a career, because I always had a camera in my hand. And he obviously, you know, was witness to that a lot. And I had never even considered that I could do this as a career. And so that was a really pivotal moment for me. And without him opening my eyes up to the fact that I could do this as a career, I don't know that I would have gone down that route. So I'm eternally grateful that my parents didn't try to put me into a box in which they felt I would make money and be successful. They, I feel like, really saw me for who I was and am and tried to push me towards what they thought would make me happy. So, yeah, I'm very grateful for that. For that moment.
You got your BFA then in photography at the Art Institute of Colorado. So you left college, and so how did your business begin?
So I went to LA for an internship, and it was not an easy, fun time. I think I learned a lot out there about how I didn't want to run my business, which I think is also an equally important lesson. So I came back to Omaha not intending to stay, just to sort of get my head back on straight. And I really fell in love with the community here. And slowly but surely, I thought, well, I'm here. I might as well start shooting and building my portfolio and getting my name out there and connecting with people. And so that's really how it started. Yeah, I just thought, I'm here. And I think, you know, one nice thing is people love having their photo taken. And so when building a photography business, you know, I of course had full-time jobs at the time, I would just reach out to people that I wanted to photograph, or if there was, you know, somebody who inspired me in the community, I would just reach out and ask if, you know, I could take some photos for them. And so, you know, I think simultaneously, I was building my community as well as building my portfolio. And, you know, then I just kept going. And 15 years later, here we are.
At that time, when you were first starting and building this portfolio, were you taking any kind of photography clients, or did you have a pretty clear vision that a certain style and a certain subject was what you wanted to pursue?
I just wanted to photograph people, just like I, you know, mostly do now. People and food. The food thing just sort of evolved because I ended up photographing some people who made food. And then I was like, oh, food is fun to photograph and I get to eat it after. as a, you know, broke early 20 something. But really people. I just, my love for people has just always been a huge part of my work. And so, yeah, in the beginning, I shot pretty much anything that had to do with humans being involved.
I was lucky to have a conversation with you before this recording. And that idea that you are capturing some essence of a moment with people, and you have this love for people that really is a continuing thread. And you mentioned some kind of hard lessons learned in LA, and I think a phrase you used with me before was, you know, it's a kind of town that eats you up. And so I'm wondering, what were some of the lessons that you learned that you were able to take away from that experience, which maybe wasn't at the time very fulfilling, but certainly gave you the foundation of knowing a little more about how you wanted to show up in the world. So what were some of those kind of lessons that you did learn in that experience?
I think the main lesson that I learned when I was in LA, specifically working for this woman, was the importance of kindness. Everybody on her staff at the time was treated pretty poorly and taken advantage of. We were overworked and underpaid and really just undervalued. And I just remember so vividly every day thinking to myself, when I have my own business, I am never going to treat people like this. And, you know, I believe in the power of kindness. I think it's the most important thing that we can be in the world, is kind to one another. And so I just remember being in LA and feeling, you know, you can find kind people anywhere you go, but I remember feeling like, I want to surround myself with people who are kind to me and who are kind to those around me. And it got to a point where, you know, although the traffic was hard and the cost of living and the general lifestyle of LA, especially if you grow up in the Midwest, is, you know, a bit challenging. But I think the main thing that was the most draining was just feeling like she wasn't a kind person. And so I remember that really feeling like the biggest lesson. When I have my own business, everyone that I come in contact with, I just want to make sure that I'm always leading with kindness.
I am thinking about your phrase that, you know, everybody loves to get their photo taken. And so there are maybe three things happening here. There is how the subject shows up in this moment. There's how you as the photographer shows up in that moment. And then there's also this third thing, which is the alchemy that somehow is created between the two of you. How, first of all, do you get your subjects to kind of show up in the way that they, maybe they don't even know they want to show up in that moment, but to fully open themselves to the opportunity?
Yeah, I often get asked this question, how do I get people to look so at ease and natural in front of a camera? And I don't necessarily have some magical equation. I think for me, being in front of a camera is one of the most vulnerable places that a person can be. And I think for me, I like the challenge of getting my subjects to let their guard down a little bit. And, you know, it varies from person to person, but I think it just goes back to my intrigue of my fellow human beings. And I just make sure that my subjects feel seen. And for me, that's just showing interest in them. I think, especially the world we live in today, we're all moving so quickly. Everything is so fast-paced. We're looking at our damn phones all the time. I think that there is immense value in just making sure that someone feels seen and like you're interested in them. And so I think that it's a combination of that and the fact that I'm a little bit of a weirdo. So I'm just a little bit goofy. You know, I think people sometimes take photography and being in front of a camera very seriously because they're nervous. They would want to make sure that they're not too natural because maybe when they laugh, they, you know, see themselves in a way that isn't how they want other people to see them or whatever it might be. And so I think that me being a little bit goofy allows people to feel like they can let their guard down a little bit. And there is always a moment in which you can tell during the shoot that they are feeling a bit more comfortable and their eyes soften a little bit and their shoulders soften. And I think for me, that is kind of maybe the magic combo, just making sure that people feel seen and celebrated and just being a little bit weird, not taking yourself too seriously either during a photo shoot.
Well, so you're also showing up then too, and you're another component of this alchemy. And so I'm just wondering how you too are able to occupy that space of bringing who you are to the person behind the camera.
Yeah, I think, you know, post 2020, I think that there are times where that feels harder. You know, the world is a different place in a lot of ways than it was pre-2020. And I find myself, you know, sometimes more energetically drained, more socially drained, especially after opening Luli. And so there are definitely times where it feels hard going into a photo shoot, knowing that I, you know, ultimately am fully responsible for bringing the energy that it takes to, you know, get those kind of raw, authentic moments from people. But every single time at the end of the shoot, I get into my car and I have this moment of fulfillment, and I have a moment of, that was fun. That was great. You know, maybe it started out, I was feeling, you know, I had to pull something from a deeper place. And it's not this way every time, but there are times where I feel I need to pull something from a deeper place to really be able to bring what I need to the photo shoot. But on the other side of it, I am always very fulfilled. And so it's a good reminder to me how much I really, really love what I do.
In some ways, your images are the proof, they're the artifact of what is this culmination of this magical moment that you're describing that has been conjured. What is that magic moment, that alchemy that is the culmination of you working with a subject, them opening up and being vulnerable and discovering in some ways themselves, and you capturing that with this visual artifact? But are you able to describe that moment?
Honestly, I think more than anything, it's the in-between moments. I think that a lot of times, you know, photographers, we set the moment and, you know, the lighting and the composition, and they're laughing and they're having a good time. But there are so many in-between moments in which people will set the camera down or they'll think, okay, I got the shot, like we're done, let's move on. And I think that it's those in-between moments, in-between shots that really capture those authentic, raw reactions from people. I think so many times I watch photographers set their camera down and miss those in-between moments. And I think if I really thought about where do the, you know, with all of the things that I've already said and that, you know, you kind of put into the equation, I think that those in-between moments are just really overlooked by photographers. And I also think that sometimes people are afraid to keep snapping. And I think that, you know, you need to read your subject and read the room a little bit, of course. But I think that there are a lot of overlooked emotions and reactions and moments during the in-between.
I'm sure there's a researched answer to this. But let me ask you, why is photography, why are photographs important to people?
It's a record, you know, it's just like an article or historical books. A still photograph is a record, you know, like I've said before, it's a literal moment in time. You know, you look back at it, you know, I think we as a people have always been visual people. I think human beings, you know, are visual people. And looking back on old photographs. There's something so, yes, nostalgic, but you can learn so much in a still image. And so I think it's just an important historical record.
You've been doing this work for quite a while. You've been doing this for, I think you said, like 15 plus years. Do you have an aesthetic style or sort of an aesthetic philosophy behind your work? And assuming that you do, how has that evolved over that time?
Yeah, my work is very punchy. It's very colorful. I don't often tweak the colors in my work. So my work's very true to color. I just bring them to life a little bit more. Yeah, years ago, I had a moment. Let's see, this was probably 7 or 8 years ago. I had a moment where there was a certain style that was becoming trendy. And it was a, you know, sort of that more, those more muted tones. People would sort of bring down the blues and the greens and the reds in their work. And everybody was loving it. And it was a trend. And I remember thinking, my work does not look like that. Do people not like my work? Am I really going to be able to have a you know, thriving business if I am creating work that looks so different than other people's? And so I actually went back and took some of my raw imagery and tweaked the post on it so that it looked more like what was, you know, coming into trend. And I just remember feeling like, this is not me. This doesn't feel, this just doesn't feel like me. And so that was a pivotal moment in the aesthetic of my work, where I thought, okay, if I am going all in on this type of style, I'm going all in. And so you can definitely see, I have always had colorful work, but you can see a very defined shift in my work during that time. I think it was 2017, where I said, you know, screw it, I'm going to be the colorful gal. And so, yeah, I think that I've just always felt, you know, we live in such a beautiful, colorful world. And in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to dim the trees. I don't want to dim the sky. I want to blast the trees in the sky. I want to show people how beautiful and colorful the world is that we live in. So, yeah, I think my work has always lived in that colorful space, but there was definitely a moment where I was like, okay, this now is really, I really want to lean in to this and have this be, you know, what my work looks like.
Did that at the time feel like an act of courage? Because you're in this to be professionally successful. And obviously there's a motivation here that is true and genuine and creative and artistic. But nonetheless, you're doing this as a profession. And so to buck a trend and say, this isn't me, I'm going to go in a different direction. Did that feel like a brave move?
Yeah, it felt, I think at the same time, I had the realization that my work is never going to be for everyone. And I think when you build a business, you know, you have this mindset of, well, I want everyone to be my audience. I want to appeal to everybody. And because when you're trying to make money off of it, you want everybody's money. And so I think that I had a moment of having to settle in with the fact that my audience will find me. I can't be appealing to everybody. And I think just as humans in general, that is a hard thing to accept. I myself, outside of my work, am not for everybody. I mean, I can't imagine who wouldn't like me personally, but just kidding. I think that the sooner as people and artists, we realize that if we are creating work that feels true to ourselves, our audience will find us.
I am thinking about your experience that you described with your father and handling some of the older technology that he was using at that time. And then you as a teenager working with disposable cameras and not, you know, at that point, not really able to control everything about it and also not knowing what you were shooting until you got the images produced. And now, of course, we live in a world where most of us, many of us, are carrying in our pocket something that is really technically very astonishing in terms of capturing imagery. So how have you seen your business change over time in the technological sense of things?
Yeah, I think that when technology advances and your business is in the technological space, it's always scary. But I think we live in a world where people more than ever need quality imagery. People are constantly getting bombarded with a million photos and videos every single day. So I think from a business perspective, it's harder than ever to stand out. And so I think having work that helps people stand out is important. You know, the phones, that's another topic we could really dive deep into. But honestly, I've never felt necessarily threatened by the fact that people can take a good photo on their phone. For me, my work is about so much more than just being able to technically take a good photo. I am actually not a techie person at all. Oftentimes people will ask me about my gear and about like the new latest and greatest. And I shoot with one lens and one body. I very rarely have any external lighting gear. I like the challenge of finding external lighting in the natural world. So I like using street lamps, and I am just not a techie person. Yes, I know the specs on my camera, but beyond that, I don't know much about, you know, the latest and greatest and all the gear. And for me, you know, it's saying that somebody creates really cool work because they have a nice camera is sort of like saying somebody created a really awesome cake because they have a nice oven. It's not about that. You know, I think that especially photographers, when they're starting out, they think they need to have the latest and greatest gear. And it's really not about that. You can really hone in on your craft with, you know, used gear, dare I say it. And so I think putting your efforts into connecting with your subjects and, of course, you know, fine tuning your craft is an important part of it. But for me, it's never really been about the gear.
So what is next seems to be a variety of online and artificial intelligence platforms that create images in some way or manipulate images or, you know, collage images into new things, some of which are wonderful and fun and creative and some of which are deceptive and illicit and unpleasant. That is to say, the future looks weirdly adaptable and maybe not necessarily in totally human hands. How are you just thinking about the future of what's next?
I have mixed feelings about AI. No, I think that AI is and is only more so going to be a powerful tool. AI, when it comes to imagery, does scare me, only because I think, you know, it's becoming more and more challenging to be able to decipher what is real and what isn't. But I think as a photographer who does this professionally, two things. I think that you cannot capture somebody's true essence through AI, through an AI-generated image. I've obviously seen a bazillion AI-generated images of people, and they are perfect, and they are perfectly poised, and the lighting is great, and their hair is great, and they're smiling, and they're looking at the camera. But AI is not able to capture a moment. a real moment that looks authentic, and they're not able to capture a human being's essence. And so I'm not particularly worried about AI impacting my business. I think, again, my audience will find me. If somebody wants to use an AI-generated image, that is perfectly fine, and they can do that. I think a lot of people want that experience with working with a real person and being able to also know that this is how another person sees me, not how a bot assumes that I look based off of other things. So I think that's part of it too. I think people still crave wanting to be seen. And I think that as photographers, we have a really unique opportunity to give that to people. And I think, like anything in business, you sort of just have to have tunnel vision with your own business. I think if I started thinking about how AI is going to potentially take business from me, you know, I think that is too easy of a rabbit hole to go down. And ultimately, I just have to have tunnel vision with my own business.
Your commitment to people, your commitment to community has found another venue, another outlet as well, beyond photography. And that's with Luli Creative House. Could you just share a little bit about what that is and why you created it?
Sure. Luli Creative House was born out of really my love for community, the arts, and human beings. So for years in Omaha, I really craved a space in which the community, whether creative community or other parts of the community, could come and just connect with the people in their lives in a space that felt joyful and safe and like they could, again, just be themselves and be celebrated just as they are. And for the creative community, a space that was dedicated to them by a creative. Okay, I'm saying creating. A space that was made for creatives by a creative. So a lot of times you go into, you know, a coffee shop to take headshots of someone or, you know, the inside of a hotel lobby or whatever it might be. And there are always obstacles to doing that. And I wanted to create a space where people could come and not only create work that they wanted to, but explore their own creativity. So somebody who maybe has never shot with professional lighting before, we offer that, you know, and somebody from my team, either myself or my team, is always on site to help them get it figured out. They've maybe never shot on backdrops. They've never shot with, you know, different natural lighting. We have west-facing windows, so we get a full spectrum of light throughout the day. And so I think I just wanted a space where people could just come together. And similarly, you know, for the community to come together, and whether it's, you know, for a fundraiser or a bridal shower or a workshop or just an offsite day with their staff. I think that I believe in the power of joyful spaces, and I think the more happy, safe spaces we have in the world, the better. So that's really where the space was born from.
It's interesting to me that at every step, it seems that you have lent into that value of kindness and joy and color and love for the world and the people in it. Have you learned particular lessons? You mentioned being sort of tunnel vision in some ways about some aspects of your business. How do you merge business success with those really wonderful values?
I think that I just believe that, you know, I mean, from a business perspective, I also am a high achiever. I'm fairly particular about how I want things done. And I wouldn't say rigid, but I I think if I feel that I am having a deep calling towards something, a vision. I mean, I had the vision for Luli for years before I took any sort of action on it, because it's a big undertaking and it's scary. And, you know, having a vision and wanting something is very different than feeling like it can be a successful business. And so I think the merger for me was really taking the time to learn about what the community wanted to see in a space like this. I, of course, have my own vision for it. However, I think in any business, it has to be a merger of your vision and also what the audience that you are serving wants to see in a space. So while I was, you know, building the vision for Luli, I met with everybody that I could. I reached out to people in the community that I had never met or spoken to and asked if I could take them to coffee. I spoke with, you know, spaces who had sort of similar programming in other cities to learn about what worked for them, what didn't work for them. And I just did a ton of research. And then I just blended what I had heard from people with my own vision. And I just learned everything I could about my community and what my community wanted to see. And I just, you know, sort of blended the visions and, you know, you just kind of take a leap and hope for the best. And I don't know if that's the best way to approach business, but it seems to be working okay so far. But I think leaning on your community is so important. I think that sometimes when people are starting a business, they think they know exactly what it will take to be successful. And I think it's easy to let ego get in the way when you own your own business. And I have been guilty of it. And I think any business owner, you know, knows what it feels like to have to sort of humble yourself sometimes and really be willing to ask questions and take feedback and learn along the way. And I think that community, especially the Omaha community, is really wonderful and unique in that way, is that they really want to see you succeed. And, you know, I think if you love on Omaha, they, for the most part, will love you back. And so I think that there's so much importance in really leaning on your community wherever you are.
You were exposed to photography when you were young. Your father was a photographer. You could see that in action. You could handle the actual mechanics of photography. You in turn have a young daughter who also now is being exposed in the same way that you were to the idea of photography, the craft of it, the mechanics of it too. So I wonder how you see her relationship with photography being developed over time.
We live in a very different world than, you know, when I grew up. And it is sometimes a little overwhelming thinking about how many photos she and this generation will have to look back on. We all have, you know, a handful of maybe some photo albums with printed photos in them. And that's it. There are gaps in which, you know, there are periods in our lives growing up where we had no photos. And these days, we take photos of everything. And it'll be interesting to see what her interests end up being. But as of right now, she is definitely leaning into photography. She, you know, I'm so grateful that I have two businesses in which she can come along. She loves coming to Luli. She obviously runs the place. And she comes to photo shoots with me. And we obviously take photos on our phones together. And she is a very inquisitive child. And she really likes precision. And she's three, by the way. So take this with a grain of salt. And, but truly, it's so interesting seeing their personalities form from such a young age. But she really values art. She loves doing art and she loves learning about how to do things. And so she loves learning about the camera. We talk about different lighting. And so she will naturally grow up with some knowledge of the photography world and, you know, some insight into what that looks like. And, but it's a different world. She'll have, photography will be such a different part of her life, even outside of if she never goes into it as a career. It will always be such a big part of her life and any future generations' lives. They'll be able to view their whole life through imagery, which is going back to the historical record aspect of it. It's maximized itself now. At this point, we take 1,000 photos a day, but it's a pretty cool historical record that these generations will have to look back on.
How is your relationship with yourself, your own sense of who you are, your sense of your identity? How has that perhaps changed, given that you spent so much of your life endeavoring to capture moments of other people's identity, other people's perceptions and expressions of who they are? So how has this practice maybe changed who you think you are?
It's an interesting question that I never really gave much thought to before 2020. In 2020, when I was unable to work for a little bit, I wasn't shooting, of course. And it was the first time in my life where I had to really sit and think, who am I without photography? And, you know, I have poured myself into that. And it's been such a big part of my identity for so long that it was kind of a jarring thing to consider. And I think being on the other side of that, I just think photography is one of those things that can be however involved in our lives as we want it to be. Naturally, it's, you know, these days it's such an easily accessible thing, but I think for me, especially after having my daughter, I sort of live in two worlds when it comes to photography. There are moments with her where I find myself not wanting to take a picture because I find myself wanting to be in these moments. So I think I'm sort of always straddling the line of wanting to capture this moment so that I can, you know, obsessively look back on all the photos of her doing things, but also wanting to just set my camera down and be in the moment and not feel the pressure of having to capture those moments. And so I think it opens my eyes up to the fact that it can ebb and flow and I can sort of make it whatever I want within my own life. And it takes the pressure off a bit. I'm like, guess what? She's going to have 9 bazillion photos of herself. I don't actually have to capture this exact moment. I can just be here. And so I think that has changed for me in a lot of ways in the last few years.
Is this the right moment for you to sing a little ditty for your daughter?
No, Stuart! Anybody that knows me knows that when there's a mic in front of me, I want to sing, but I'm not going to. That's all we'll have to do. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, though. I'll be back.
My guest has been photographer Ariel Panowitz. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Stuart. This was great.
Lives is brought to you on KIOS Omaha Public Radio and is produced by Courtney Bierman. The music you hear playing in and playing out is performed by Andrew Bailey. Podcasts of today's show and others can be found at livesradioshow.com or where you get your podcasts. Subscribe today and please leave a review. I'm your host, Stuart Chittenden. Join me next week as we delve further into the practical and profound possibilities of living well. Thanks for listening. But the mice are still alive. I mean, you could...
Okay. Let it go.